Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s. And each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Inside information on your teams, honest opinion, and the biggest names in sports. It's time, Las Vegas, for the Playmakers.
Wednesday, right?
Yes.
Brand new month. Brand new month.
Brand new calendar?
Yep.
Basically.
Tore off the big page in my office.
Did you?
Yep.
Mine's still on November.
I moved it over from June to July. It's official. Paul and Lindsay, the Playmakers, we have endured half a year so far, which has already felt like more than a full year for some of you.
And fuller serving, I would say.
Certainly some of us out there as well. But hey, you know, we're plowing down the road to a very sleepless weekend as everyone sets off their fireworks starting on Friday because it's just what we do.
Right.
And then Saturday because it's just what we do.
Yep.
And probably Sunday because it's just what we do.
Paul, sports are coming back this month. They're already starting to come back, but the bigger ones. So at least we have that to look forward to.
The bigger ones? What do you mean the bigger ones? We've already had baseball. I mean,
not here in the United States. Not the core four.
We've had it in Korea and
yes,
and Taiwan and Japan. And
congrats to all the champions.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we're playing soccer again all over the United States.
I mean, it's not official start, but for the core four it is.
Sure, but we just haven't figured out where they're going to play and when they're going to play, but that's all sorting itself out.
Yeah, it's fine. We don't need that information at this time, do we? It's not important.
Yeah, we might. All right, let's get you the five biggest stories of the afternoon.
It's your daily checkdown, powered by Radio.com Sports. Number one.
By the way, Sam and Ash will be joining us at 3:18 to get a view of life and sports through their lens. Sam and Ash, because you deserve what's right. Okay, so Allegiant Stadium's trying to fill the place up. We still don't have word about that Garth Brooks concert, but let's be honest, probably not going to happen next month.
I don't think on his calendar.
Yeah, you know, he might have friends in low places, but not here in Las Vegas.
Well, he has the drive-through concerts that he's been putting on for $100.
Junk.
Yeah.
Junk. Just go buy a couple of CDs, really.
CDs? Can you buy those still?
Yeah, that's what it is. Most of the Garth Brooks stuff's all on CD still. Mm-hmm. I mean, because they took him so long to digitize.
That's true.
Like, mm-hmm. Between him and the Beatles, it was like, you know, 100 years of waiting to get their stuff on Apple Music.
Right. I don't know.
It's finally there. Anyway, one of the proposed dates for a Tyson Fury-Deontay Wilder fight will be right around the time when we have the shortest days of the year, right around this winter solstice, I guess.
Winter seems a far time away.
It does. December the 19th, according to Top Rank, telling ESPN that a potential fight for this fight between Fury and Wilder would be at Allegiant Stadium. And they've actually reserved the date.
Oh, really?
The Raiders play on the Thursday, on December 17th.
Excellent.
And so when the game is over, they basically clean the place, put up the ring, and then have the fight 48 hours later.
I'm all for this. What a cool place to have a fight.
That would be a monster fight.
That would be a monster fight.
That's the reason why they built that stadium, right? Beyond football.
With the boxing potential, correct.
So we could do cool stuff besides football.
Exactly.
Like have, you know,
lawn darts, horseshoes. Right,
some really big cornhole competitions.
Chipping in golf.
Yeah. Have you seen that set up when they do that? They set up the golf at some of the baseball parks a couple of years ago.
Right on the very top levels, right?
Yeah.
It's kind of like a Top Golf, but Not at the very top.
Right. They did it like at Fenway and a couple other stadiums. It was kind of cool. Anyway.
I would like to volunteer for that experience.
Yeah. Boxing. So they're talking about Allegiant Stadium. December the 19th, Fury and Wilder. I mean, who knows if anyone gets to go, but there is a possible date for some big-time boxing, and that's pretty cool.
That's cool.
To be able to talk about.
Real nice.
Moving on to the bad news.
Number two.
All right.
You know, this is what it is. It's the truth. So everybody woke up this morning while you slept, because while you slept, negotiators for the NHL and the NHLPA, which is the Players Association, decided they're going to hammer out a few things, which include paying out some bonuses to players, which include trying to figure out a new collective bargaining agreement, and trying to figure out if Vegas is really where they want to be. Well, apparently Vegas is not where they want to be, that all those clever commercials and that the lights are on and all that stuff just didn't quite work out, because according to pretty much every insider on the planet associated with hockey,
yes,
that the hubs for the NHL will not be located in the United States, barring some sort of Loch Ness Monster UFO meteorite crashing into the planet, that Edmonton and Toronto will be the two hubs for the NHL as they restart.
A true example of summertime sadness here in the Las Vegas Valley, but it's hard to blame them for their reasoning of bringing those two hub cities up into Canada, but nothing is technically official. But as you said, Paul, literally everyone that has watched a hockey game or had a conversation with someone of note has said, yeah, this is happening.
Yeah. It may happen today. Who knows? May not happen tomorrow. But
whatever.
The expectations are, because we can't wear masks.
It's really hard
it's
to
the
do,
truth.
Paul. It's really hard to wear masks.
It's the freaking truth.
It's really hard.
Seriously, they just look at the numbers. The NHL just looked at numbers. That's all they did. They said, listen, don't screw it up, and you can host a bunch of hockey players for a couple of months, pump a little extra money into your economic engine, and get a feel good. And instead, because we can't freaking follow directions or even suggestions.
No. We end up where we are. And it's really unfortunate, Paul, because obviously this city could really use added excitement, could use everything that goes along with it. So it's very sad and completely preventable. So hopefully we can take this and take these lessons and be like, hey, maybe because we didn't get the nice thing here because we didn't do something, maybe if we start doing something, then we get nice things.
Maybe we can have boxing in December. We can all go to that fight. If you've never been to a fight in a really big place.
I've never been to a fight in general.
I went to a Holyfield fight at the Alamo Dome.
Really?
Yes. It was insane.
Compelling, like, and rich?
It was an amazing experience. A fight in a giant stadium. Mm-hmm. There is nothing like it. You cannot... It is a completely different experience from just smaller venues. And, you know, and no disrespect to many of the boxing matches that we've had. We have some glorious matches here in Vegas, for sure. We have some great UFC fights. I've seen many of them at Mandalay and at MGM. But when you have a stadium fight, it is a much different experience.
It's a special experience.
So let's be cool, everybody.
Yeah.
Because
we're
not getting the hockey.
My God.
And so let's try to have some nice things. But yeah, Vegas is getting shut out of this one.
Yeah, it sucks.
Yeah.
Sucks.
All right, moving on.
Number three.
All right, so the coronavirus continues to cut into our lives. And as Lindsay mentioned, we're waiting for the big four to come back. But the big four is going to take a little bit longer to do so, as the NFL tried to keep its calendar moving forward. But now, as they're saying, they're calling it the upside down.
What? Really?
That's the NFLPA executive director, DeMarie Smith, who talked with USA Today writer, talking right now we're in the upside down. So they have. They are going to, not official, but everybody, again, this is another one of those. If you are an NFL writer at any way, shape, or form, you have confirmed the news that because the NFL is struggling right now with trying to get people back into camp and trying to figure out if everyone's going to be healthy enough to work out and get into game shape, they are truncating the preseason. This started back when they canceled the Hall of Fame game, which was set for August 6th. Now, we're just waiting for the official announcement, but they're going to cancel week one and week four of the preseason. So we will go from four preseason games to two preseason games.
So everyone will have a home game and an away game.
Correct. The way it was always set up, you would still have a home and away game.
I mean, this is one of those silver linings, because I think we've all been like, let's do fewer preseason games for years. But now that we're here, different reasoning. I don't think we're ever going to go back to four, ever.
Yeah, we may have seen the last of the four-game NFL preseason for good. This is done, most likely. But what it means is now the preseason is going to start the week of the 20th in April, and they'll play back-to-back weeks, and then they'll have
or
essentially...
in August?
Yeah, in August, yeah. I'm sorry.
That's all good.
The week of the 20th, where we'll have Thursday, Friday, Saturday games, and then the week of the 27th, they'll come right back again. So the Raiders are going to shave off a matchup with Seattle in week one and a matchup at home against the Rams in week four. So they're still going to play... they're still going to have two preseason games, one at home, one away, but a little bit different situation. And then they'll essentially have a week off leading into the Labor Day week before they actually start the regular season.
And I know that as much as the health parameters and protocols are the foremost concern, they're also thinking about how are we going to be able to onboard all these guys into new system, all the rookies and stuff, the learning process that is training camp in the offseason that hasn't been able to go on like it usually does. So... yeah, two less games kind of stinks this year because we like the programming, but going forward, I'm all for it.
Well, it means now you have one less week you need to deal with cramming a bunch of preseason football into your television watching. As the NBA,
that's what we're all doing.
The NBA and the NHL are still plowing down the road in baseball, so 1 week delay on football, but camps will be in, so I'm sure since no one's going to be there anyway, it's not really going to matter.
Yeah.
No one
happy times!
No one will get to see it anyway.
No one's going to be watching.
All right, moving on.
Number four.
All right, so it's time to get a little bit strange. There is a proposal out there that I actually think is fairly smart, but I'm not sure how states would be able to pull it off unless they started now, just based on how high schoolers train and summer camps and things like that. But there is a suggestion in Michigan that they flip the sports schedules, that you play the spring and the fall... and the fall and the spring, because the spring sports tend to be a lot more non-contact sports and already encourage the social distancing. So you would have, and this is just Michigan's proposal, this is from the governor of Michigan, saying that they would play baseball and softball in October, and then move the heavy contact sports into the spring. So football, volleyball, soccer.
Yeah.
And just flip the two. I don't have a problem with it. I worry about the logistics, but it kind of makes sense because it gives everyone a little bit more time to work on that long-awaited vaccine.
Yeah, absolutely. And if there are sports that are able to be played, why not switch those two schedules? I think this is a really creative way to help it. But like you said, Paul, most of these fall sports would be starting their captain's practices in the next couple weeks and starting full-blown, their preseason and those games that usually starts, you know, in August and stuff. So that would have to be a really quick adaptation. But, you know, somebody should try it. Why not Michigan?
Yeah. Again, interesting idea.
Yeah.
A generally decent thought to flip the two.
Yep.
It allows high school athletics to move forward. And, I see some potential in that idea. Whether it gets off the ground, I don't know, because, you know, we just don't like change.
Yeah. So. It's topsy-turvy.
That's what it is.
Number five.
Okay. So, interestingly enough, we've discussed this at length about stadiums and the quietness of stadiums, where so much, in fact, that in soccer stadiums in Europe, they're already pumping in artificial sound.
Mm-hmm.
It sounds a little strange. It's got a little video gaminess to it, but in some cases it sounds real, but you have to get past the fact that there's nobody in there making that sound. You know, it's like holding seashells up to your ear.
Correct.
I can always hear the ocean, but I know there's no ocean inside the shell.
I can hear the ocean.
There is a thought now that, you know, we've talked about the NHL and the chirpiness on the ice.
Yeah, the naughty words.
Right. Well, they're thinking about that in the NBA, where squeaky shoes are fine and clanging of rims and whatnot. But you've been to summer league games to where, you can actually hear people talking in the stands and eating food. They're thinking it's going to be amplified because very few people will be in the stands outside of a handful of athletes and a couple of journos when the NBA gets together. And so there is a thought from NBA Commissioner Adam Silver that they would tape delay the games.
Ever so slightly.
Right, ever so slightly, just to make sure that language use was fine.
Yeah, because it is going to be a concern.
For sure. Now, Donovan Mitchell tweeted out, one of the original kind of coronavirus survivors,
truthfully.
Said, no, I want to hear it.
I do too.
Hear it. And so there's something that they're pushing around because, you know, think about it. You know, I'm a corporate sponsor. Probably not going to be too crazy that, you know, Russell Westbrook's talking a little bit more trash than normal.
You don't want to be not necessarily associating the product with their product with the players, but what's being said. You're in the heat of battle, you're in the moment, you're trying to communicate the most effectively, and as someone who is well versed in that dialect, the swear words, the naughty words, there's absolutely a concern for the NBA and the NHL.
Yeah, the last time I sat courtside literally was in it was 2002. I sat courtside for a Portland Trailblazers Los Angeles Lakers game at the Rose Garden in Portland.
Really?
I had the boss's seats.
Oh,
oh yeah, earplugs. Earplugs.
Really?
So when you think about this, and, you know, I don't know Patrick Beverley, but I know he's quite the lockdown defender. And I know I'm told he's quite the talker as well, that, you know, maybe there needs to be an SAP channel as well. If I want to hear the full Monty, then give me the full Monty on the alternate channel.
What ESPN did with The Last Dance, you had the ESPN channel, you could hear all the swear words. But on ABC, on the national, on the network, no swears. I think there should be both. I want to hear all of it in its glory.
I'm okay with it. I'm actually really okay with having the option. I'm like, you know, because in most cases you don't get that. I mean, they're already crowd mics and parabolic mics picking that stuff up anyway, especially, you know, when guys took hard fouls under the basket, you would always hear a word.
Oh, right. I mean, 100%. You know,
there was always something. So I can imagine the tape delay. I totally get it. And remember, they're at Disney too. So, you know.
Oh, no.
Yeah, right.
Don't say that word.
Yeah, please don't say that word. And wash your hands.
Yeah.
All right. There's your check down. Your five biggest stories of the afternoon powered by radio.com sports. Coming up next, a look at sports and life through some legal eyes. Sam and Ash, join us next.
You found the Playmakers on CBS Sports Radio 1140.
Paul and Lindsay with you on this Wednesday afternoon.
Wednesday.
Hump day. Get July started off right with our friends Sam and Ash. Visit them, samandash.com. And because you deserve what's right. They join us now here on the Playmakers. Sam, good afternoon.
Hey, guys.
Ash, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, everyone.
Hi.
So thanks for hanging out with us today as we move through this long year, which we believe we're still in 2020, but sometimes it doesn't feel like it because we do live in a surreal life. And speaking of surreal, guys, I want to talk to you about something that just kind of popped up on my radar very recently. That's Ezekiel Elliott was on his Twitch stream. Talked about he plays a lot of video games and realized he hadn't ended his Twitch stream before he started talking about he was low-key faded. On this Twitch stream, he says low-key faded. Now, Sports Illustrated wrote an article about him saying he forgets to log off and admitted to being high. But Zeke came back and said, no, I was just having a few drinks. Doesn't that make this defamation? You guys will be hearing from my lawyers. Does Zeke have a leg to stand on with this?
So, you know, I saw these tweets and everything popping up, and I had to laugh. Poor Zeke. Like, everyone's just always out to get him. But I think he was just referencing the drinks that he had had, which he had already, I think, admitted to. I'm no expert in the lingo of everyone today, but it's my understanding.
Sure.
It's my understanding that you say faded when you're actually drinking, but I could be wrong.
Oh, weird. But still,
but
he's
being accused. He's talking about going to lawyers. Should Sports Illustrated just cut the check and say, yeah, we kind of missed on that one?
What are his damages? I mean, if the Dallas Cowboys had, you know, docked his pay or fined him in some sort, then he has some quantifiable damage to his pocketbook. But I don't think this has caused any damage to his reputation, especially considering the conduct he's already done prior to this. So it's not like he had a squeaky clean reputation to begin with.
What do you think, Sam?
Exactly. Oh, exactly. But, you know, in these defamation cases, it's not enough to prove that a defamatory statement was said or published. You have to prove that you were affected by it and that it cost you something. And that's where a lot of these cases fail. And I also think that, I mean, it's 2020.5 today. And,
right.
I think that nobody really cares. I mean, what if he was on there and said, I just smoked the blunt or whatever? I mean, who cares? And again, if the team didn't dock and pay, if he didn't get fired, if he didn't lose, if let's say he lost a sponsor over this, or a sponsorship or a, you know, some kind of a deal. Then you could maybe proceed with something, but without damages, it fails.
Well, speaking of sponsorships, UCLA is back in the news. I know we talked about them a couple weeks ago, but their deal with Under Armour apparently is up in flames right now because Under Armour is going to be pulling out of the deal with UCLA, and it's a 10-year crazy deal. And I'm wondering, because I saw this tweet by Darren Revell last night where he said this deal's worth hundreds of millions of dollars, and it's over the course of a decade. But neither party signed the contract. How does that happen, and how does that work? I don't understand how you could just sign a deal or have a deal in place and then not sign it.
Well, I'll tell you, that's funny because that actually happens, and it happens with a lot of money at stake, and I've seen it personally. So I believe it. Now, the funny thing is usually that happens because one side is sloppy and the other side wants to keep things loose. But you can hold a contract that isn't signed, but that's been written and that's been followed for a period of months or years. You can make an argument in court that the contract it's a binding agreement nonetheless, because you've performed under that contract up until, you know, the day that you've stopped to. So you can actually enforce, in most jurisdictions, you can enforce an unsigned agreement. You're not out of it simply because you don't sign. So that's an interesting thing.
So does that mean they have a case then? Or at least UCLA is going to be able to say, hey, we're still going to be expecting these dollar amounts because the deal technically isn't really valid, right?
Because you're still dealing. There's two issues, right? Did they sign the agreement or not? Fine. I'm telling you, I think that's not going to be a sticking point. So it'll come down to the agreement. And people always say, is there really such a thing as an unbreakable contract? You know, and I look at it a totally different way. I look at contracts are written to be broken, and within them is the language that will determine how much it will cost the party that wants to exit the agreement to exit the agreement. So there's going to be the likely outcome here is that the agreement, the contract will be more or less valid, and that Under Armour will exit the agreement. And it's just going to be a question of what type of damages will be owed to UCLA. And the better of lawyers that UCLA has to make their, the better lawyers that Under Armour has, the less money they'll owe UCLA for the breach.
Sam and Ash joining us, samandash.com. Visit them online. Also, you can give them a call, 702-820-1234, 702-820-1234.
Representation.
You're just stepping on the phone number now.
Sorry.
702-820-1234. Guys, I like to say we have entered now the season of stupidity, where we are all going to light off lots of things that tend to explode either on the ground or in the air here in the next 72 hours. This is one of those odd places, and I know Ash hates the hot coffee syndrome, but this is one of those things where if I lose a finger due to a firework, you know, this is, you're going to see something, right? Someone's going to file something somewhere saying, because of this, the wick was too short, or there was nothing on the package that said must place on ground, as opposed to please avoid placing on ground. We see this stuff, right? I mean, it's inevitable.
Yeah, it's inevitable. And it, pardon any sirens you hear in the background. I think the police are coming after Rocky finally. But yeah, so you will see these types of these lawsuits get filed, but it's an inherently dangerous activity that they're taking, and there's an assumed risk. There's warning labels all over these things. But now if someone else is using a firework in a different and improper and dangerous manner that goes against its intended use, then you'd have a claim against that person, and that's when you'd want to call Sam. Because if someone else is outside of their house using an illegal firework and they shoot it off and it blows off your finger when you're walking fluffy down the street, now you have a claim against the homeowner's insurance policy of that person.
Absolutely.
That makes total sense. Other than taking those calls, hopefully nobody mishandles fireworks this weekend. But what do you guys usually do for your 4th of July plans? I know things are a little weird this year, but what do you have on the docket, Sam?
Well, assuming that we have fireworks here, which I think they haven't been canceled yet. I'm planning on going to a vantage point and waiting for it to get dark and then watching fireworks. I love it. I absolutely love the show. So I know they're probably going to be a little more scaled back this year, but I love the 4th of July. I love this country. My parents are immigrants. This is my favorite holiday. So, true story, when my parents moved to this country, they got pregnant with me and they named me for Uncle Sam because they were so happy to be here. So this is my holiday and I'm very excited to spend it with family and see some fireworks.
What about you, Ash?
From a safe distance.
Yeah, the same. I like to do, a little backyard barbecue at the pool, assuming the weather's nice, which it usually is. And so, I kind of lay low and enjoy the holiday with friends.
But you have a dog, though, so it's a little different.
Rocky's a champ.
Okay, Rocky's not fazed by the booms and that kind of stuff. Okay, that's like unlike every other dog that I've ever known in my entire life. So
he has earmuffs.
So Rocky's birthday is actually July 5th, so I think it's kind of in his blood that he celebrates the 4th pretty avidly.
Happiest day of birth to Rocky. My goodness, that is a special birthday.
Well, because this year has been, like, nearly 2 years, so, like, he's aged 14 years, right? That's usually how it works with the dog.
Oh, yeah. This is going to be his second birthday, which in human years he's entering terrible twos, and in dog years, he's what, 14?
14.
So he's going to be a teenager.
Yeah.
So terrible twos and teenager all at once. I think it's the worst.
Does he have an outfit? Does he have a hat? An Uncle Sam hat, perhaps?
Oh, he might. We might have to find one for him, but he'll probably have a festive bow tie.
Oh, even better. Love that.
Sam and Ash joining us here, samandash.com, where you can visit them online, always on call there, as well as taking your calls, 702-820-1234. Better off and better be safe than sorry this time of year. Just put it in your speed dial, 702-820-1234. Just call out Sam and Ash. Guys, we hope you have a good Independence Day holiday, a good 4th of July. Take care of yourselves, each other.
Likewise.
And hopefully... We cross paths again with all our appendages and phalanges and things intact next week.
Of course.
Yeah, please, no one drink and drive. Be safe out there. Get an Uber, but don't get behind the wheel. It's dangerous. It always happens this time of year.
And no drinking and fireworks. That's also dangerous.
It's a pretty good life lessons there. Take those down in your notes.
Sam, happy 4th of July. Ash, happy 4th of July. Thanks, guys.
Thank you. You guys too. Bye.
SamandAsh.com. Visit them online there because you deserve what's right. Give them a call, 702-820-1234. You get a little nugget every once in a while. Named after Uncle Sam.
I know, which really makes a lot of sense, but it's great to have a story behind the name and everything.
Yeah.
I don't think I have a story.
Well, he wasn't, if he was born around a more obscure holiday.
Yeah.
Kind of like National Pancake Day. Would he be like Pancake? Pancake and Ash?
Yeah,
be kind of
right?
Odd.
Did your parents have a name picked out if you were a girl that you know?
No, not that I'm aware of.
Do you know what my name would have been if I were a boy?
Larry.
No, but almost as cool as the name Larry. Carl with a K.
Carl,
can you imagine Carl Brown?
I suppose.
Yeah, Carl with a K.
Be the Playmakers with Paul and Carl.
Paul and Carl!
It's all right. There's lots of good Carls.
It's good. Out there. It's good. But it's not as good as Paul and Lance.
Carl from The Simpsons and
mm-hmm.
Carl Lewis.
Yep. From Jimmy Neutron. Carl, correct.
Right.
Mm-hmm. That's all the Carls I know.
Carl Crawford.
That is a person that exists, correct?
That is a person that
yes.
exists. Yeah.
Carl.
Carl's Jr.
Yep. Carl Anthony Towns. Plays for the Minnesota Timberwolves.
Right. You have Carl Malone.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Lots of Carls.
There are lots
good
of,
company.
Yeah. Carl George.
I'll stick with Lance.
Whatever works. Coming up next, does 2020 just get a big asterisk for every sport ever? We'll explore that next.
You found the Playmakers on CBS Sports Radio 1140.
Paul and Lindsay with you on this Wednesday afternoon.
Hello.
As we wait a schedule for the baseball season, which will last just 60 games, should we be placing asterisks after sports for this year? We've all faced what has been described as the coronavirus timeout, which I'm okay with that one.
Mm-hmm.
But with 60 games in baseball, there's been this thought that any records that are set would still be records but have asterisks after them. Because when you talk about goals and things that can be attained in a shortened baseball season, it's very possible someone could hit 400.
Yes.
It's very possible someone could post an ERA of less than one.
Mm-hmm.
And so you would be an automatic Cy Young candidate in terms of a pitcher.
Yeah.
But should those awards, first of all, be awarded, and should they actually count?
Well,
hitting 400 through 60 games, which is possible, completely possible.
Yeah.
But in the record books, again, I'm not sure it stands correctly.
Well, I think you still hand out the awards, but I think everybody probably goes into this situation as a Major League Baseball player and says, what's the goal of this year? Like it is every year. To win a chip, to win the World Series trophy that means so little to the commissioner, but means a lot to everybody else. And those awards are very important. Sometimes those come with bonuses. Those come with cash incentives. But I don't think any of these guys are going to be like, yep, this is where the mindset is. It's just going to be a dead sprint. It's kind of like everybody's in the pennant race and you're starting at the end of July and you're just like, go. And so it's not, we might see it, but I don't know how much of a deal will be made about it just because it's going to be so quick.
The NHL is already talking about postseason awards and replaying.
Mm-hmm.
an asterisk for the NHL.
I don't think the NHL has. I think this is actually tougher for the NHL, and theirs is probably the one that is most consistent with what we would see in the normal season. The only thing that is different this year is the qualifying round and the round robins to help basically decide the regular season that was stopped before it was able to be completed. And once we get through that qualifying round, it's all game seven series. It's four series to win the Stanley Cup. So I don't think there's really an asterisk associated with that trophy.
So no one's going to go to the Knights and say, yeah, you won a division championship, sort of. You just happen to be there before the actual regular season finished.
Yeah.
And you still get to hang the banner regardless.
Well, are we in the business for division championships or are we in the business for
Stanley
Cups?
Well, no, that's not what I'm saying. That's not what I'm saying. I'm just talking about the record books. As the record books go down, you know, you're going to say, listen, coronavirus caught everybody off guard and we just, you know, this is just what it is.
Well, you can't just say that just because it stopped early that the season that was played doesn't exist. It's not like there's, we're not going to hang this banner.
Well, no, the season did exist.
Exactly.
But is it right to declare yourself division championship even though you still had more games to play?
If the league declared you the division championship, then I would say that's how it works.
Okay, that's like the universe. That's like Central Florida saying they were the national champions when they went undefeated that one year.
Hey, fake it till you make it. Believe in yourself,
I'll
Paul.
I'll buy it.
But you know what? To be totally honest, with baseball, even if there is an asterisk argument, come on, 2017, that's an asterisk. All these cheating scandals that have taken place over the years, those are just as invalid as this season. So that's why it's going to be the same.
But when you talk about baseball, though, and some of those records that are out there, you talk about the home run record, the big payoff there isn't the asterisk. It wasn't the fact that the record wasn't broken. It's the fact that the player that hit the home runs is not in the Hall of Fame.
Right.
That's the punishment.
Yeah.
That's the asterisk.
But he still hit all the home runs.
Correct.
Right.
But we accepted that regardless.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm saying in 2017, we accepted it. They didn't have to vacate a World Series.
Yet.
But they haven't vacated World Series. Pete Rose hasn't vacated the hits title because he gambled on baseball. He's just being kept out of the Hall of Fame unfairly, I will
add.
So
it's technically a self-imposed asterisk then. It's just in action. It's an action-esque.
So hitting 400 in baseball, you're okay with that in a 60-game season?
Yeah, well, everybody's playing in the same season. I know that you can do the comparison to the years prior, but that's, you can do that with every other season, whether that last year when everybody was hitting a ton of home runs, you can say, well, that's a weird year. Were they juicing the baseballs? Are we going to go back and question that one as well? No, it's just things are weird from year to year. Just deal with the season that you're in, and that's what you have to compare it to.
But see, when you look at the NBA, they're actually restarting with teams that are, they're still playing games. The teams that qualified for the playoffs, they're still playing a season.
Yeah.
So I can see where there's no asterisk there because they're still going to complete a season. They're still playing for seeding potential.
Yep.
The teams that made the playoffs.
Yeah, so is the NHL. Just a different way of getting to the same destination, am I right?
except adding 8 more teams.
Yeah, but their qualifying round is the same thing as the remaining games that the NBA is going to play. They just put a better branding and they made it a little more fun and creative, if you think about it. It's the same thing.
They made it a tournament.
Well, when the playoffs start in the NBA, based on the plan, are they all 7-game series? Are there 4 series?
No, they're going to play, but they're still playing games prior to even starting the playoffs. I know. I'm saying they're still finishing the season.
Yeah, so is the NHL. They're playing games.
It's automatic. The NHL's playing
to determine
they started the playoffs, though, but they've essentially started the playoffs.
They have, and they haven't. Just different branding.
Okay. Well, I'll buy it. Hey, listen, I'll buy it. We're just having a chat here. Yeah. Paul and Lindsay here with the Playmakers on CBS Sports Radio 1140 as we talk about the possible asterisks that'll be placed in these sports books after the year 2020. The NFL's still trying to figure itself out, clearly.
Oh, that's even too far out. I'm looking more at, like, what about golf and tennis? If you're playing a major and say not everybody's showing up, do you view that title?
No, you do, because there are injuries. Golf's different. Guys get hurt. Mm-hmm. Women get hurt. They just have to sit out because they can't play. Even if they were the number one player, like Brooks Koepka, who sat out, the 4th-ranked player, there were still other players. There's a more level playing field in individual sports than there are going to be in team sports.
Yes.
You know, it's based on the best day, like in the Olympic Games. When you play golf, golf is not 4 rounds of golf at the Olympics. It's the best player that one day.
But what about the people that say, well, to be the best, you have to beat the best, and if the best aren't playing, then are you beating them at all?
They're not replacement golfers. They still earn their card. They earn the card on the tour.
But I'm just saying, if somebody wins their first major ever and nobody and half the field that we're used to seeing isn't present, big name like Dustin Johnson.
There's lots of guys that have won majors that have one-hit wonders and just kind of walked off the planet, and they keep getting exemptions and they show up and they card a plus 16 on day one.
Which is why I don't think it's an asterisk for that.
Yeah, I'm not worried about an asterisk for golf.
I think it's mostly baseball is the one that is the most, because it's the one that's the most messed up. And it's their own fault why it got so messed up.
Well, sure, in terms of just establishing a season and the labor, but set that aside, it's a shorter season.
Yes.
Where goals are more attainable. They're clearly more attainable in some categories. No one's going to go out and hit 73 home runs in a 60-game season.
Right,
it's not going to happen.
Baseball's defined by failure.
Correct.
Yeah, whereas the other sports, it's really not.
But gold glovers, you're going to have, 100 guys in contention for gold gloves, because it's not improbable in a 60-game season for you not to commit an error on the field.
I know, but do people vote the golden gloves?
It's based on statistics.
It's purely. There's absolutely no bias whatsoever.
It's statistical. It's statistical.
And it's decided that way. There's no voting.
It's decided on just, did you boot 8 balls this year in the outfield, or did you boot 3? Now, you have legitimate like ties where guys like literally just committed like one error and things like that. But you will have probably a third of the league in across the league be eligible for a gold glove in the NL and the AL. And they're going to have to go to whatever magical tiebreaker that there might be.
If they're all working with the same exact stats, which the likelihood of actually happening is so ridiculously low.
Correct. But remember, this is why that asterisk is important, because you talked about money and winning ships. Yeah. And when you win ships, you get money. When you win MVPs, you get money.
Yep.
A lot of these guys have gold glove incentives. It's not cheap.
Exactly.
Like, you don't boot a ball, you can make an extra $50,000.
But we were going to award them this year, even if the season had gone off without any hitches. So, that's the thing. Even though it's a shortened season, you're still handing out the same awards that you were originally. It's not like you're going to hand out more. There is going to be a differentiating factor. They won't need to go through 18 tiebreakers. I really have a hard time believing somebody's going to hit 400. I really do.
$20.
Fine. Book it.
Done.
$20. Trent, you're keeping track. You're good at math, right?
$20.
Yeah,
Someone will hit 400 in the majors in 60 games.
$20. It's our first official bet on this show. What a special day it is.
There you go.
July 1st, baby.
Well,
new
July
year,
1st,
new us.
20 and a half.
Yes, exactly. 20.5.
Coming up next, your daily pep talk.
You found the Playmakers on CBS Sports Radio 1140.
On this halfway point of 2020 and a half, that's where we're at.
Living out of prayer.
I'm just stealing that now. Just, it's 2020 and a half.
I like it.
After the morning that I had and the afternoon that I had, it is 2020 and a half for sure.
Absolutely.
No doubt about it.
Absolutely.
Paul and Lindsay with you here on this Wednesday afternoon. Tony Cordasco joins us after the top of the hour. But first, time for our daily pep talk.
It is time for our pep talk, Paul. And today, it's all about courage. And it comes to us from Chispa Motivation. Trent, let's run that tape.
I think that the people that are discovering how to unleash their greatness, are people who have the mental resiliency and the courage to face failure, that you will fail your way to greatness, that most people allow their fear of failure to outweigh their desire to succeed. When you're willing to fail again and again and again, when you make up your mind to become unstoppable, when you make up your mind to become a no matter what person, then that will then give birth to a part of yourself that you don't know right now.
Do you have the courage to act outwardly on what you see inwardly? Or will you die a dreamer? Will you die on the verge and on the edge and in the land of coulda, woulda, and shoulda? I'm going to drop something on you. It takes courage to be successful. It is far easier not to be successful. Misery will always have company. Success breeds contempt. If you don't want to make waves, be mediocre. Be normal and fit in. And if you're more concerned about people than you are God, then neutralize everything he put in you. Just fit in with everybody else. Dress like them, walk like them, act like them, eat like them, go where they go, think like they think, do what they do. And once you've neutralized your uniqueness, you don't need courage. It takes courage to be different. It takes courage to be exceptional. It takes courage to be wise. It takes courage to be rich. It takes courage to be educated. It takes courage to be knowledgeable. Because the moment you do, you don't talk like, oh, you just forgot where you came from. Look at you talking. It takes courage. And I'm just wondering, in this weak, watered-down, mediocre society that we live in today, in this reality TV world we live in today, I'm wondering if there's anybody left that's got the courage to say, after all I've been through, and all my ancestors have been through, and all my parents have been through, I didn't come through all of that just to fit in with normalcy. I have the courage to go after my dream and stand for the Lord. It takes courage to get you outside of the box. Courage to be successful. It takes courage to win. People don't talk about people that don't win. If you win, they're going to talk about you. Do you have the courage to stand there till the storms keep raging and the people get to talking and you stand there and say, I've come too far to turn around? Do you have the courage?
All about courage.
Courage, man.
He was shouting a little bit, but I get it. A little more passion than it was shouting.
Sometimes you have to hound the message in via the voice.
It helps.
It does
a little. You might need some courage if you want to be part of the Golden Knights and Silver Knights promo teams next season.
Oh!
I don't think it's liquid courage that you need, but you know, you
sure it helps.
You tip your cap to those who, you know, go out there on the ice and shovel all the extra shaved ice that's out there.
Yes.
That's part of the gig.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it requires some athleticism, obviously.
Well, and you got to be able to skate.
Skating helps.
It's not a skill we're born with.
We had an interesting crew when I worked for the San Antonio Rampage.
Really?
It wasn't that they couldn't skate. It was that it was in combination with shoveling the ice.
Yes.
And that was kind of...
You have to walk and talk at the same
time.
You
know, it was a good thing that they weren't televised because it's like, you know, we don't have 90 seconds. We need at least another minute to be able to get the shavings off the ice.
Or they're one of those where they use the shovel to help balance them out. If they lose the shovel or if the shovel hits a rivet in the ice, which... are all over the place.
Sure.
It's all on the ice, including you.
So the Golden Knights are looking for, there's actually double the opportunity this year because the Henderson Silver Knights are coming. So you'll be able to do the Henderson Silver Knights team. There's an ice crew team. So the Knights Guard, you can start submitting applications on Monday.
You need to wear capes.
For 2 weeks. So the Knights Guard, and then there's the Vegas Vivas. And then they do a bunch of stuff. And then the Henderson Silver Knights, which there is no name for, said quote, in-arena promo and hype team.
Mm.
They are looking for people who can also skate and do it, but also do improv comedy,
okay,
juggle something, and rollerblading.
I can do all three of those things.
I would assume that it would require juggling, you know, pox, you know, or...
Yep. T-shirts.
Scarves and things like
scarves
that.
Scarves are easier.
I don't see balloon animal making here. I don't see sleight of hand card tricks.
Do you know how to make balloon animals? I feel like you do. Have we discussed this?
No, my animals are terrible. Oh. Like, I have a hard enough time getting around my fat fingers just to be able to tie off a balloon.
let alone
actually create an actual balloon animal.
This isn't what I had envisioned for this.
I create a lot of lowercase L's.
It's a great letter.
I'm really good at the number one.
That's great.
Yeah.
That's great. You can code balloon animal.
Minus signs. I'm really good at that balloon.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
really great at those. Snakes with rigor mortis. I'm really good with those balloon animals.
That's a very challenging balloon animal.
Right? I can do a centipede as well if you give me a Sharpie.
Snake with rigor mortis. Oh, my God. Oh, you're a delight.
All right. Tony Cordasco is going to join in hour number two as I duck out, but lots of stuff coming down the pike as we continue the sports conversation on this Wednesday. Yes, the 1st of July. Playmakers, stick around.
Inside information on your teams, honest opinion, and the biggest names in sports. It's time, Las Vegas, for the Playmakers.
Greetings and salutations. Welcome to the month of July. We are the Playmakers. And by we, I mean me, Lindsey Brown, and my co-host who joins me each and every day, starting at 4 p.m., Mr. Las Vegas, Uncle Tony Cordasco. Dasco, what's up, my dude?
Happy Bobby Bonilla Day, Lindsey.
True that. But not a tough day for him, really, for the next 15 years or so, right, Dasky?
Yeah. So he's now 57, former Met, 15 more payments, no less than $1.19 million per payment through 2035. So what happened was, you know, in case fans don't know the story, in 2000, the Mets agreed to buy out his contract, which was around $6 million. And then instead of paying him that money, they agreed to make payments of nearly $1.2 million for the next 25 years.
Mm-hmm.
They were involved. I think it was the Ponzi scheme or the Fonzi scheme or something with Bernie Madoff back then.
Oh, yeah.
And then, and they promised like that they would get double-digit returns. That didn't work out.
Oh, yeah.
So the Mets take yet another L. But Bobby Bonilla today for this year will be making more money, at least base salary, than Cam Newton.
Oh, wow.
Or Jameis Winston.
Oh, wow. I mean, it's pretty impressive when you just happen, whenever the calendar flips to July 1, you just walk out to your mailbox, you're just like, oh, look, $1 million. I mean, that's pretty much a win, but that is a low blow, Dasco. But
All of the slander,
all of the Ponzi schemes. But Dasco, speaking of slander, you like to frequent the social media platforms. You have several burner accounts. Do you have a tweet that you'd like to share with us for your Don't At Me with Uncle Dasco portion of our show here?
Okay, so this was early this morning. It's 12:43 a.m. Do you know where your mask is? So don't worry about the kids, folks. You need to make sure that you know where that face mask is.
True. You should have one within arm's reach at all times. But I have a bunch of them littered about my place, about the office here at CBS Sports Radio. How many masks do you have at your disposal, Dasco?
I have two.
You have two?
I've got a little rotation of two. Yeah. I don't like the flowery one as much. I have the one that has the Las Vegas Aces logo on it.
Oh, I want one of those. I need to get one of those cool ones.
I bought that early. It was like $15 or something.
Yeah.
And then, you know, I wash it probably every couple of days.
That's good.
I make sure they're clean.
Hygiene is important. Good stuff, Dasco. We always enjoy hearing some of your wisdom that you put out on the social media platforms with your Don't At Me with Uncle Dasco part of our show. But we got to stick to sports, Dasco, because that is what we are told to do. But we have news because sports and current events exist in the same reality. So we must discuss them as they come to us because we live in that same reality, Dasco. And, you know, since we're officially in July, that means we're going to see one of the core four sports start to return. We have the NHL on the horizon, we have the NBA on the horizon, we have Major League Baseball on the horizon, but You know what else is still around? The Rona. We cannot escape it. That's why we need to have those masks around us at all times, even at 12:43 in the morning, Dasko. I really appreciate you focusing on safety for all of us here. But there's a coach for the Chicago Cubs, their pitching coach, Tommy Hotovoy, who is 38 years old. He actually had a pretty tough bout with COVID-19 last month, and he detailed his experience with it. And so I just kind of wanted to discuss this just to keep this in the forefront of our minds of – because when we talk about COVID, when we talk about the Rona, you know, the Rona's, it's a joking way to deal with our current reality. We have to be able to joke about it. But there are real consequences. This is a real thing. This can affect people. And this is something that's going to be at the forefront of all of our minds as sports come back, Dasko. But he had the really bad bout with COVID last month. As I said, we're talking about Tommy Hotovoy, who was a pitching coach for the Chicago Cubs. But he ended up being hospitalized, Dasko, and lost 18 pounds while he was battling the virus and suffered through 6 consecutive days of temperatures in the excess of 100 degrees. And as he said, jeez, I got crushed.
Yeah. And, you know, he's a guy that said he had no underlying issues previously. He said in all of his years in the major leagues, they do a lot of testing.
Oh, yes.
So he was poked. He was prodded. He was tested for the last 16 years around MLB. There were absolutely no red flags. And he just said he had to wind up going to the hospital. He had to receive breathing treatments. Mm-hmm. And he's still not out of the woods just yet. And that's the thing. Like, a lot of folks might think that they get the coronavirus. They go in, they get treated, and
yep,
then
2 weeks,
back to
you're
normalcy.
Good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but it's not. And we're starting to see that. And Hotovoy said that he no way near feels that he's 100%. He still has, you know, a lower lung capacity.
Yep.
And he said he's got shortness of breath, which we've heard from a lot of athletes as well.
Right.
So, but he's still going to go. He's still going to go, you know, and report
right
to the Cubbies.
And there are a few coaches that are already basically being placed on the bench and not going to be participating in the season, including my team, the Minnesota Twins. They have a couple of older coaches on their staff that they're saying, yeah, they're not going to be anywhere near the ballpark this summer because they're just taking precautions. But like you said, Dasko, 38 years old, you're healthy, you're an athletic guy, and it still puts you on your ass, and then there's still more to deal with. And we have to remember, too, with the lung capacity and the shortness of breath, it's more than just I can't breathe right now as I'm working out. That means your heart has to work harder to get the oxygen throughout the rest of your body. And that's where you're seeing a lot of this cardiovascular stuff with the heart. So there's so many different things that can be affected. And obviously, everybody's an individual. So the virus is going to work differently for all of us. But I know Major League Baseball, much like all the other sports, are taking every precaution that they can possibly take to help minimize the risk of this. But it can't be zero, Dasko. It cannot be zero.
No, and it does prove perhaps that you can slightly recover in 14 days, but he said that days 8 through 14, he had significant respiratory issues,
mm-hmm,
and had what they call, the doctors diagnosed as COVID pneumonia. And then moreover, you know, like, you have all those symptoms, and we know now a little bit more about what it does, and it does indeed attack the respiratory system in your body,
right,
and it takes you over. But outside of that, he had feelings of depression.
Mm-hmm.
And then something that, you know, we really don't talk about much when we talk about the coronavirus, he said that he had guilt feelings because he brought the coronavirus home to his family.
Yeah, and that's the and you're absolutely right, Dasko, because we haven't really unpacked that concept. And this is the first that I've seen someone come out and say, yeah, I got really depressed in general, let alone for the reason that he said. But this falls right under the banner of the stigma around the disease. And you don't want to get sick, but it makes complete sense. I exposed my family technically to this. I could have been doing things better. I should have been at home, and that mixed in with all the other symptoms that you're experiencing, it's easy to see how kind of earth shattering this can be, and how much it is in play and how compromised you are.
Yeah, and even though he's not 100%, why would he still go right now?
Right.
I'm just curious. He's the pitching coach for the Cubs, and he says he'll still report, you know, to the team. But my only question would be, after all that, and if you don't feel 100%, why go?
Right.
Why go anyway?
Right.
Why go anyway, you know? I mean, now he does have underlying issues.
Exactly.
Effectively.
Yeah, and especially if he's not back to full strength yet, that still means that he's compromised. And that's the thing, too, is that it's a tough thing for coaches. It's a tough thing for everyone. But obviously the players in all the resumation plans are going to have opt-out options. But it's a different thing for coaches. And I know that there is absolutely some worry there, at least on the NHL side, that if I'm an older coach and I say I'm not comfortable with going, first of all, am I still going to have a job? And second of all, how does this put me just in the collective consciousness in the industry? Because that changes the way that people look at you, whether it's good or bad. There's just a different change, and you're voluntarily giving up your spot. And so it's I'm not saying it's a bigger decision, but it's a much different decision. But in addition to the health concerns.
Yeah, and you know, around the NBA, we've had, you know, all those reports about older coaches, mm-hmm. and their safety and their health, and a lot of them are kind of being told, well, don't go, but they're still like, no, I want to coach.
But the NBA
said
that.
And there might be a little friction there,
yeah.
you know, between both sides, the management side, the league side, and then the professional side of the coaches. Right. And their agents are getting involved, too.
Exactly. And I think I saw earlier on ESPN, perhaps, that the NBA said that the coaches can't just cite age for the reason that they're not going. So there are going to have to be other hoops, other reasons to prove technically, that this is not a smart thing to do. I have a doctor's note or whatever else to basically permit me to make this decision. And that's where I'm just kind of like, well, if we're extending everything to the players, why wouldn't we do that same thing for coaches, especially if they're at more of a risk?
Yeah, it was Mike D'Antoni, right?
Yeah,
I think
something
was one
like
of the
that.
Coaches.
Yeah,
D'Antoni with the Houston Rockets.
And yeah, Popovich.
There was a lot of discussion. Well, yeah, and mm-hmm. Coach Pop, but, you know, D'Antoni specifically, I had read something where his agent came right out and said, hey, don't try to fight us on this because he wants to coach. So they could have some friction there between coaches and the league.
Right. There's a lot of moving parts, Dasko, but we're going to switch gears. Well, we already kind of went there to the NBA because yesterday we had Cedric Maxwell on the show, Celtics legend. You can catch that on the radio.com app if you didn't have a chance to hear that. But we talked about what the NBA is going to be doing in regards to placing social justice messages in their resumation plans, making sure that they're using their voices, their platform to help further the movement and everything else. And it seems like they've come to some sort of a decision. This isn't official, but sources say that the NBA players have decided that they're not going to use the names of those who have died in police custody or in racially motivated incidents on the backs of their jerseys due to concerns about offending those close to someone whose name might not be used. And a source tells the Undefeated Mark J. Spears. And additionally, it would be difficult to get permission from surviving family members. Obviously, this isn't the only thing that they were looking at as an option to help amplify those messages. And I'm not saying that the jersey thing is completely out, but this is it's an update, right, Dask?
Yeah, and you know, so and I guess that everyone will be okay with that. Again, you know, when we did talk to Cedric Maxwell yesterday, mm-hmm. I mean, we just brought it up, and you know, he said he might have like I can't breathe, you know, on the back of his jersey,
right?
He wanted shut up and dribble.
Yeah, he gave us two really good options. Those are both great options.
We'll see a lot of Black Lives Matter, but yeah, shut up and dribble would be the best.
Yeah.
That says it all.
Yeah.
But there's going to be some interesting ones on there. And then we were talking about, like, who's going to police the names of the slogans, you know, that are going to be on the backs of these players.
Right. There is absolutely going to have to be some oversight there. And at least just to make sure everything's spelled correctly and everything's good to go. Because that's the worst. That happens on jerseys quite often, Dasko, when you have a really long name. That sometimes there's a letter in there, especially if there's a lot of differences in vowels. But Chris Paul, who is the players union president, who has been very involved in pretty much everything NBA related, said that they're just trying to continue to shed light on a different social justice issues that guys around the league continue to talk about day in and day out. People are saying that social justice will be off everyone's minds in Orlando's with these jerseys. It doesn't go away. And that's what I mean. You have to make it where you can't lose it in the message. You can't lose it in the shuffle. And that's why it's not all just going to be the jerseys on the back. It's not probably going to just be Black Lives Matter on the court around the outside of the lines and stuff. There's going to be a lot of things that they're looking into doing. But, you know, I think this is a good way to help amplify that and to showcase that. And at the end of the day, too, you could sell the jerseys and that could help towards charity donations and otherwise.
Absolutely. So the NBA and the NBA Players Association today, again, they added to that. They said that they will continue to discuss the fight against systemic racism, and that will be pretty much the focal point, or one of the focal points. Playing basketball is a focal point,
right,
of the reboot, you know, along with the Black Lives Matter. And then, you know, programming and different programs for a lot of the players and for management, and ways that they could get better and be more active, you know, in communities. But Black players comprise 75% now of NBA rosters, so they have to do something, and I think it's important that they get back on the court. And I think that this, we saw this in women's soccer. You and I had talked about this earlier in the week, and we saw how impactful it was for the women's. They had, like, their numbers were phenomenal,
right?
You know, on CBS TV, and everyone was watching. People were watching. It's pretty much a captive audience right now with no live sports on. And here you have, you know, that moment where the players are kneeling, the embrace of the two players, and all of that. And it was very impactful. And I think that people might be underselling what you can possibly do, you know, if you get out there and you do things in the right manner, and not a way where, you know, you can't
placating.
Go over the top.
Yeah.
Yeah. You can't go over the top.
It
you
has
can't.
To be organic. It has to be organic. And
precisely.
But the thing is that you have to set the table. You have to put the right things out in front of them, and the right, you know, platforms to make sure that those moments can be created. But you're absolutely right, Dasko, because we can have this. We've had this conversation over and over and over again. But the thing that is going to stick with us as the larger message are moments like that. And that's those are the things that propel you forward, because the noise gets lost in the background. But those images and those moments that are created are the ways that we all keep that motivation up. And that's definitely something that NBA is going to be looking to do. I'm guessing most sports will be looking to do that in some way, shape, or form, Dasko. But we are going to move on. And on the other side of the break, I kind of talked about this with Paul a little bit. But no fans in the stands. How does that affect the players and their psychology? We'll get into that next. Right on the other side of the break, we're the Playmakers on CBS Sports Radio 1140.
You found the Playmakers on CBS Sports Radio 1140.
It's a Psychology 101 Wednesday right here on the Playmakers. Lindsey Brown and Tony Cordasco hanging with you guys here until 5 p.m. We're here each and every day, 3 to 5 p.m., but we appreciate you guys choosing to join us. And, Dasko, we've talked a lot about the empty stadium effect, how that impacts revenue streams, how that impacts viewership, how that impacts fandom. But we haven't spent a ton of time talking about how it's going to affect the players, and not just where, well, players, do you like to have fans in the stands or not? Yes or no? It's not a yes or no question. There are going to be tangible differences and tangible psychological effects on the players and the referees, actually, when we get back at least to the core four sports here in the United States this month. And so we have a couple of articles we'd like to share with you. And Dasko, it's let's start with the referees one, because this is fascinating to me.
Mm-hmm.
Because what this article is saying in Sports Illustrated, coming to us from Jed Jacobson, what they're saying is that when there aren't fans around, that the refs actually call the games a lot more fairly, because they did a study on fanless games at soccer in Europe, because we've had a few moments where the fan bases get a little bit too rowdy, things get violent, and they say, guess what? To help quell this, nobody gets to show up. And so they studied the referees' tendencies and whether or not they made calls and where they would fall. And it turns out when there's a crowd involved, when there's fans around, that referees actually end up rewarding home teams a lot more often than they do visiting teams, which you're like, oh, that completely makes sense. But Dasko, why? Let's extrapolate why this makes so much sense here.
So, again, if there are fans in the stands, then they have something called conformity bias, because they want to conform to the fans and which way, you know, everything is going. And, you know, they do get most of the time, you will get, you know, maybe a couple of homer calls, you know, per game, regardless of the sport and whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, the one thing that kind of stands out here is that I looked at some of the numbers of what home court or home ice or home field advantage, you know, might be. And so, like, NBA, for instance, it used to be 69% of the wins on home courts. And now home teams only win 54%. And then, you know, hey, Major League Baseball, look at what happened in the last World Series, where for the first time ever, seven games were all won by visiting teams between the Nationals and the Astros. And then NFL, now the home field advantage in the National Football League is just 52%. And so even if there's an empty stadium, an empty arena, and let's say the, and I think one of the reasons too why this is happening is because if you do get those homer calls now, you have replays where you might not have, they did not have replays before, right?
Right.
Say within the last decade, where you might be able to have had, quote, judgment calls, right, go your way at home in the past, and now they're probably overturned. And without the fans in the stands, yeah, I think they can call things a lot more evenly because it almost appears to them and their vision, and they don't hear the crowd, like it's a neutral field. It's a neutral field.
Yeah, right, right, Dasko. But we also have to remember when it comes to replay and stuff, it's not necessarily trying to figure out what the right call is. It's trying to figure out, was the original call the right call? And if it's the wrong call, it has to be conclusively, you know, obvious to overturn it. At least that's how most sports look at it. That's how the NFL looks at it. But when you mention conformity bias, Dasko, and that's defined as our tendency to take cues for proper behavior from those around us rather than using our own personal judgment. When you're refereeing a game or you're running around and say you're watching the play and something happens in front of you, like a penalty or something, and it's the away team imposing a penalty on the home team, the crowd goes, oh my God, what is this called? Put your arm up, that's a penalty. And so in your brain, when you're having thousands of people yelling, that's a penalty, make a call, ref, and other colorful language, I'm sure, but that's going to incentivize you, and you're going to want to conform because this, you're getting all of this reinforcement from the behavior of those around you, and that's where this can be effective in making those calls, because they're immediately going to probably side with the home side when they have all of that coming at them. But without the fans, then it's all about more personal judgment. And it's just so interesting because I think that we as human beings think that we have way more control over everything than we actually do. But at the end of the day, we're animals. We're human beings. We are very much apt to the psychological effects of people around us, even if you don't even know it most of the time. And it's interesting because I want to switch over to the other article here, Dasko, about specifically with the NHL players and how it's going to affect their psyche in game. Because every sport is different with how they interact with fans, but we know how hockey buildings are. We know how loud T-Mobile Arena gets here and what it feels like when the Golden Knights score a goal and what it feels like when the Golden Knights give up a big goal. It becomes silent, like everything's sucked out of there. And Matt Duchene, who's a center for the Nashville Predators, says that he thinks it's really going to suck not playing in front of fans, and not just because it's not fun, but hockey is really a game about momentum and managing momentum, and fan interaction has a direct, if not the most direct, effect on momentum, just in terms of the ambiance on the ice.
And yeah, and so Duchene, he said the one thing that we won't see when the NHL resumes are, again, with no fans in the stands, we won't be, he said that the emotional swings will be less severe. So again, emotion, momentum, big, big points. And then when you get scored on at home, when there are fans, you know, in the arena, it sucks the life out of your team. And it's a big swing, particularly, you know, in the National Hockey League, where obviously goals are hard to come by.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, most games are tightly contested, you know, one or two goal games. So, yeah, in the NHL, it's big. And it also, you know, here, I mean, what a huge home ice advantage VGK has because of the fans, because it's loud in the arena.
Right.
Because it gets Ryan Reeves amped up and he wants to punch your face in.
Exactly.
You know, it's like it gets the fans fuel the home team. And it's a different, it's got to be a much different feeling in there, because you might come out and not be as intense.
Exactly.
You know, yes, you want to win, but it's a different type of intensity. It has to be.
Exactly. And we're talking about an article that was written in The Athletic earlier today by Adam Jim Vingan about the impact of no fans and how the game of the NHL and the Stanley Cup playoffs, how different that's going to be for the players. And they rely a lot on Dr. Colleen Hacker, who's a sports and performance psychologist who serves as a mental skills coach for the U.S. women's national soccer team, as well as ice hockey teams and other roles. But, Dasko, like you said earlier with the momentum swings, they're not going to be as severe. But the thing is that the onus is now on the players to create that for themselves rather than reacting or relying on the buzz about the arena. And Hacker, the sports psychologist that was cited for a lot of this stuff here, said that in her experience with working with hockey players, that most players, when they're on the ice, you're fully immersed in the game. And as someone who spent a lot of time on the ice, that is 100% true, just like anybody else. When you're playing, when you're in the moment, in the heat of the battle, you're not really paying attention to what's going on around you. But the thing about hockey is that you're not skating out there the entire game unless you have goalie pads on. You go to the bench and you have some time to think. You have to catch a breather until your next shift. And so there's the larger momentum of the hockey game. But when you're an individual player trying to go in and do your part, you know, you're in it and then you're out of it. You're in it and you're out of it. And you rely on the fans to keep that energy up. And without that, that's going to be on the players to help, like you said, get that motivation up, get that intensity up. And I'm not saying this is a huge, like, this isn't a huge thing, but it's something that they haven't had to deal with before. And any sort of deviation of energy or time spent thinking about this or just action, trying to make sure that you're keeping that intensity up, that's taking away from the overall game. That's just, you're adding something else to think about. And we all know you play your best when you're playing your most free.
When UFC resumed, some of the fighters came out and there were no fans in the stands. I remember they did their first bouts in Brazil, mm-hmm. and the fighters came out like waving to the fans who were non-existent. You know, there was nobody in the stands because they're so used to playing off of the fans, right?
Right.
And then with hockey, Dr. Colleen Hacker, who you were quoting,
yep.
She said that most of the time players are caught up with their shifts, right? So you don't hear the crowd. A lot of the times you won't hear the crowd, but then of course there's breaks in the action. And I know like Marc-Andre Fleury, right? He said that he watches what goes on in the stands, the music. He's all about it whenever
right.
there's a nice little breather. And then that gets him going, gets him jump started to come out again.
Yeah.
Are they at least going to have, so with the NHL, are they going to have the fake fan noise in the arenas?
I'm not
are they
really
gonna
sure.
Have music?
I don't think you can really do the fake fan noise when you're inside an arena because it's just going to echo about. And it's not like they're playing music or anything while the game is actually being played. That's during the breaks in the play when the whistles go or in the intermission and whatever else. But otherwise, I think it's just going to be straight up silent in there. And I know Paul and I talked about earlier about the NBA's might be utilizing a little bit of a broadcast delay just in
a
case.
Delay.
Which is absolutely something that will have to be
well,
utilized.
Well, in hockey, you're going to need it. You're going to need it, yeah.
100%. Yeah. But
you're not going to say, I'll knock your block off. You're
right.
going to say,
yes.
bleepity bleep. Your face.
Exactly. But just to expand on what Hacker was kind of saying as well, she said some players will be advantaged by having fewer fans. Some are going to have to develop or implement capabilities that they didn't have to before. Some athletes, the fans help them generate their best performances. That is a fact. And that's where she relies on the social theory of social facilitation, where we play better, we perform better when people around us are watching and
when
are encouraging
watching, right?
us and saying, yay, you are good at this. We are cheering for you because you are doing it. That's just going to create that's positive reinforcement 101, Dasko. And when you have that, you know, support that we're with you, you're doing the right thing, you're playing your best game, you don't have to worry as much about concentration and grabbing and maintaining momentum shifts and mental resiliency. But with the silence, with the breaks, with you hearing everything that everyone else is saying, you're really going to have to bunker down and put the horse blinders on in terms of your inner dialogue. And as much as I love that Marc-Andre Fleury says that he says that it pumps him up, he looks in the crowd and the music, that wasn't my experience as a goalie. And that's going to be different for each and every single player, because some of us have to be in a certain mindset all the time, because if we start thinking about other things, we get distracted, then we get off of our game. And that's the thing, because hockey's not going to be made or broken by one player. But if you have two or three star players that are used to being like, yes, good, you're awesome, and feeding off that positive reinforcement for their overall game, you're really going to have to take this into account. And coaches and organizations are going to have to go through some stuff to basically help combat this with their players.
And, you know, the NHL players in professional sports and all these leagues, they will still have fans watching, so they can sort of feel them anyway, right? And with social facilitation, the doctor said, Colleen Hacker, the psychologist, was saying that your imagery still has to be vivid, mm-hmm. and that you need to focus on what is the same.
Yes.
In your game.
Exactly.
What is the same?
Control what you can control.
Absolutely. And so, yes, by memory, go out and play your game. Focus on what the pieces of the game that you played before. You need to bring the positive pieces to the ice with you.
Down to the minutia, too. The net is the same. My stick is the same. I'm still, if it's a 2-1-2-4 check and I'm F2, I'm supposed to go in and get the puck while F1 pins. Like, none of that has changed. But like I said, the distraction piece, the deviation of the norm, that's going to take you, that's going to take that internal monologue away from those reminders. But you're absolutely right, Dasko, and same with the doc. Because it's just all about minimizing and compartmentalizing. I'm on the ice. This is my shift. This is my job. That is my guy. I don't go down there. I'm supposed to go here in this situation. That's all you can focus on. But that doesn't just happen automatically. If you're not, if you haven't practiced that skill, that's not going to come to you. You can't expect somebody that has never skated before to go out there and start doing crossovers.
So at City National, you know what I would do? Mm-hmm. I would have them play games. Again, play full, like, periods, or, you know, scrimmages for three periods or whatever, just so they kind of get used to the ambiance of nothing.
Yeah, and I'm sure that they have, but at the end of the day, too, you can't really ever create a practice scenario that would mimic a game, because it's just the intensity isn't there. It's not biologically possible. You know that there's nothing on the line for this practice versus when you're on the ice in T-Mobile and there's another team lined up on the other side of the ice. But you need to take those little steps. You don't need to practice it in its entirety. You just need to do those little building blocks of, oh, is my internal monologue starting to go in a different direction? I got to correct that. I have to go, oh, the net's over there. Maybe it's that small. Or the puck, I get the puck, get the red, dump it in. And you just have a mantra. You just run it in like a record player. That's what I would do. But it's definitely something that is going to affect the on the ice, on the field, on the court play, the lack of fans. So at least we're not alone in kind of missing out or not having things the way that we're used to having them, Dasko. So everybody's dealing with a little bit of weirdness. But on the other side of the break, it's a weird season. There are championships going to be handed out. Trophies will be awarded. But are they going to count the same? Dasko and I will get into that next right here on the Playmakers on CBS Sports Radio 1140.
You found the Playmakers on CBS Sports Radio 1140.
Happiest of hump days to all of you out there, and happy July. Yes, the calendar has indeed turned. We are officially in a month where some of the core four sports that we follow here in the United States are officially coming back. And that means there are championships on the horizon, Dasko. There are going to be trophies awarded in just a few months. I know we're not in any rush to get to those trophies. We're just looking for some straight-up gameplay. We want to see some faces and some skill that we haven't seen for a while. But it is a weird situation. It's a weird year, and every sport is dealing with their own set of special hurdles in terms of how they're getting back on the field, what their season's going to look like, how this is going to look going forward. But there seems to be a lot of people discussing whether or not these championships won this year are going to have an asterisk. And it's a conversation that we've had a couple of times here on the Playmakers, and one that Paul and I got into earlier. But Dasko, you're familiar with Giannis Antetokounmpo. Oh my God, I practiced this for like 10 minutes before
Yeah,
I know. We'll just go with Giannis. I was doing so well in the commercial break, but there's too much performance anxiety here. But Giannis, who is going to be leaving behind his family, including his infant son, Liam, with his number one seeded in the Eastern Conference Milwaukee Bucks, he completely disagrees with the notion of anybody considering this championship, at least in the NBA, as an asterisk type of a season. He said, I feel like a lot of people say that there's going to be a star are next to this championship. I feel like at the end of the day, this is going to be the toughest championship you could ever win because of the circumstances are really, really tough right now. So whoever wants it more is going to be able to go out there and take it. Your thoughts, Daskey?
Well, I have to agree with him because you're starting and stopping. And again, when they get back, we don't know what their rosters are going to look like with players that are opting out. Mm-hmm. Although Mike Budenholzer, the head coach of Milwaukee, said that he expects the full team to be there when the NBA resumes. So the Bucks, who were the best team, you know, in the East, they're going to all be there when play resumes.
Right.
So as far as the asterisk goes, I think that is still TBD. And I know that sounds like a wimpy way out, but I say let the games play out. Let them play out.
Right.
What if the teams, you know, by the end are limping to the finish line? What if they are at half strength by the time they get to the finals? Or, you know, what if teams have to back out? We haven't even thought about that. What if they have to, like, forfeit a game? Or if the league gets stalled? You know, a lot of variables to consider. What if you're playing, Lindsay, in the NBA down to the wire and you've got like three of your five starters are G Leaguers?
Yeah.
Then it's an asterisk for sure.
Well, isn't
for
that
sure.
basically what's happened to the Brooklyn Nets? They've had several of their starters pull out already.
I don't think anyone's left.
And you're absolutely right, Dasko. But like you said, at the end of the day, everybody is still dealing with this situation. The only reason why this asterisk conversation is happening because we're trying to compare this season to other seasons that have come before it. But we can't compare this situation to any seasons that have come before because we've never dealt with the Rona. We've never dealt with this amount of craziness. And that's the thing. Everybody is going to be dealing with that. But like you said, there are going to be players that are probably going to be unavailable at some point once they get down to the bubble. These teams aren't necessarily going to be at full strength. But at the same time, you're still sending people down there. You're still competing, and they're finishing out the season. You know, they have those burner games that they're going to have in the NBA about eight before they start their full blown playoff season, which is completely the same as it would be if we weren't dealing with the Rona. And you could say the same thing for the NHL. You know, you have those qualifier rounds to basically decide those final seeds, and then they're moving on with a full blown Stanley Cup playoffs. I think the only sport that you could say maybe there's an asterisk is baseball. But like you said, Dasko, there's so much up in the air that we have yet to see and to figure out. But it's not like the integrity of the game of baseball is something that can be compared to at this current point in time, to be totally honest.
Yeah. So like you were talking about the Nets, right? So
yeah.
Earlier today, their general manager, Sean Marks was saying how the Nets are going to show up with a team.
Yeah.
What that team looks like, he's not quite sure because now they just had, you know, a couple of opt-outs yesterday. Spencer Dinwiddie's out.
Yeah, DeAndre Jordan
is out.
Mm-hmm.
Right, test positive, and he's like, no way. And then, of course, Kyrie's not going. Kevin Durant's not going.
Right.
And so they're going to put together. That's going to be one of those teams that's a G League special, but they're going to have to show up. But
right.
It could be, I mean, it's going to be trying, and there's going to be the mental aspect in the NBA of being quarantined in the same area, just with the same people by repetition every day. And you're going to go stir crazy.
Right.
And even if you're playing basketball, well, outside of basketball, so the basketball game lasts a couple of hours, 2.5 hours, and then what? You're back into like isolation and, you know, feeling lonely, and maybe that depression sets in, and who knows?
Right.
And who knows?
And some people have personalities that are conducive towards a little bit more of an isolationist lifestyle. Like Dasko, as tough as all of this has been, I really value a lot of alone time, and so it hasn't been all bad, but there is a line, and I'm sure that is something that they're going to take into consideration. But Damian Lillard, who is fresh off his first NBA 2K22 or 21
cover, right?
He was kind of talking about how he doubts players whether they're going to be able to strictly follow all the protocols. But he said basically the way he's approaching the bubble, Dasko, is that What time do we have to be at the facility? What time can I go in for treatment? Otherwise, he said, I'm bringing my Xbox, I'm bringing both of my PlayStations, I'm bringing books, and I'm going to chill in my room, because you do want to socialize, you do want to go out and hang with the guys, but you're still going to have to have those bunny ears up and have to have those social distancing protocols in place, and that can just eat away at you.
You're absolutely right. And I would try to structure it as much as I possibly can if I'm the league, you know, make it structured so that if you do have programs that they can attend and DJs and shows and movie night, right? And that one big movie premiere, you know, and like make sure that you have it all sort of structured so that there's something for them to do.
Right.
There's something for them always to do if they get bored, you know, with the Xbox, if they don't feel like just staying, you know, on their own little pad or whatever. And then Eric Spoelstra was also on the record saying that he feels that it could be the most worthy of all world championships.
Yes.
Because of what teams have had to go through.
Exactly.
To get there. Just to get back there.
The amount of adversity that we all, as a collective humanity, have gone through in the last 6 months as we turn the page on the first half of 2020, the longest year of all time. You're absolutely right. There's so much that these players are going to have to overcome and keep in the back of their mind, and there's a huge amount of risk. So if anything, it's the opposite effect. This is like a times two, even though it's a little wonky, it's a little weird, but just the disruption, as we talked last segment at length about how just the lack of fans can really throw you off your game, at least psychologically. You know, this is straight up 3 months. That's where you're hanging. These are the people you're hanging with, except you can't really hang out. Close-ish, and you have to perform at your championship level. And so that's a very tall order, and that's what makes these championships just as worthy, if not more worthy, for recognition compared to all the championships that have been handed out previously. Good stuff, Dasko. But
you know what? Tomorrow, too, MLS reports, they start to report their first games will be on July the 8th, so one week from today. So MLS is reporting tomorrow.
Interesting.
We'll see how that goes in Florida.
Yeah, and I'm pretty sure today is the deadline day for NBA players to basically let their teams know if they're going to be opting out or not. But that's what I mean. We're in the month of July. It's been a slog, but this is the actual calendar month where things start to look a little more normal. At least we're seeing teams and seeing players get back to the business as usual. But we got to make sure that we're doing everything in our part to make sure that they can do their jobs and entertain us. So wear your freaking masks, people. Wear your masks. But Dasko, we do need to end the show on positive vibes because that's what we like to do. We're nice people. We want everybody to be feeling good at the end of the show. So what we do is we like to highlight positivity during our cheers segment. So we hoist our metaphorical glasses, our tall, our small, our lit, and our bitten to someone, somewhere, or something that is good and bright. So Dasko, who are you cheersing for positivity today?
A gentleman by the name of Clayton Ward, who is a school bus driver in Massachusetts. He was inspired by students who rode the bus to go back to college and earn his degree. His family owned a school bus company in Tennessee. When he moved to Massachusetts, he followed in their footsteps and he drove a school bus. He had dropped out of college around 10 years ago after a few semesters, and the students helped him to rediscover his desire to go back to school. He said he likes to work with high school students, especially. He likes history. He said he would chat about their classes on the bus, and he would share some lessons with the students, maybe help them out if they had questions. And then after several discussions with a lot of the students, a bunch of them said, hey, we want you to be our teacher. And that inspired him. It would be great if you're better than our teacher. And then he said, you know, however small that mention was, he said it fueled him to go back to a community college, and he got his degree there. And now he was accepted into Framingham State University in Massachusetts, where he's going to be pursuing his bachelor's degree in history with a minor in secondary education.
That just pokes my heart. I had a really special bus driver when I was in elementary school, one that, you know, knows all the kids by name, knows what they like to do, chats with them. I think he even got me a birthday card once, just a super nice guy. And that just shows you the power of just a little bit of positivity and interaction with people and how much that can impact their lives going going forward, Dasko. That is a hell of a cheers. Hell of a cheers. And actually, for my cheers, Dasko, we're going to stay in the greater Bostonian area as much as I...
Why do we always do this?
I love Boston, but Boston, it can be a little much. But I'm going to be cheersing some science stuff today, Dasko, because the MIT's Computer Science and Artificial Intelligence Laboratory, in collaboration with Ava Robotics and the Greater Boston Food Bank, have designed a new robotic system that powerfully disinfects surfaces and neutralizes aerosolized forms of the coronavirus. The approach uses a custom UVC light fixture designed at the MIT Computer Science and Artificial Intelligence that is integrated with the robotics. The results were encouraging enough that researchers say that the approach could be useful for autonomous UV disinfection in other environments such as factories, restaurants, and supermarkets. But the thing is about this technology is that it's usually meant and in use and designed for factories, for big time just areas. But the fact that they're going to be able to use this new technology to help disinfect the Greater Boston Food Bank and those areas that have become extremely important in the time that we live in with coronavirus running rampant, because food banks are facing a particular demand due to the stress of the virus. In April, the United Nations projected that because of the virus, the number of people facing severe food insecurity worldwide could double to 265 million people, Dasko. But,
wow,
you know, the food banks, they don't close, but you want to make sure they're open as much as possible. And we have to make sure that they're being cleaned and disinfected to make sure that they're doing their best to minimize the risk. And they're going to be able to cut that work flow time in half and be able to use this in other ways as well. So cheers to science and everything that MIT is doing with Ava Robotics and the food bank. Good stuff, Dasko. And great timing. God, we're good at our jobs. Any last words quickly, might ask you?
Some days.
Have
a great night.
Thanks. You too, my friend. Thanks to you, Dasko. Thanks to Trent. Thanks to Paul. And thanks to all of you for hanging out. We'll be back tomorrow at 3 p.m. And until then, be well, stay safe, and wear your damn masks. Bye!
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.